Hello everyone and welcome in to the Youth Hoops Pod presented by Pro Skills Basketball. This podcast covers a wide range of youth basketball topics, from high school and AAU basketball to college recruiting, NCAA, NBA, overseas basketball, mental health and performance, leadership, and much more. Now let's jump into today's conversation. We hope you enjoy.
Welcome back to the Youth Hoops Pod, presented by Pro Skills Basketball. We're at it again, and we've got a change of direction from our previous handful of conversations. We are detouring away from the world of recruitment, and we're going to sit right down in the lap of player development. I've got a really awesome guest, a good friend of mine, PSB Richmond Director Rashid Wright. What's up, my man?
What's up, Chris? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Listen, I'm gonna start this podcast off a little fun, like I did with Coach Mark Slade the other day. In the wise words of NWA, you are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge, and street knowledge meaning basketball knowledge. So parents and players and coaches, sit down, get your notepads out, and let's just level set on what we see around player development, development in general. And the premise of this is, in our experience, development is a marathon, and we are facing an epidemic right now where everyone thinks it's a sprint. Everyone's looking for the next best thing. Everyone's looking for the quickest way to get from point A to Z, and there is no quick way. And it's very passionate on Rashid's heart because he's seen it firsthand, and so that's why he's on the call today. He's in the conversation because he is helping us lead the charge, both as the PSB Richmond director, but also as our national coaching advisor for PSB to pour into our coaches. And so, Rashid, my man, really appreciate you being on the call. Super excited for the conversation. Just to chop it up like we're on the front porch, just two OGs, two old men just talking about the youth and basketball. So I'm going to turn it over to you because I know that you've got a really cool story, really cool firsthand experience, and I'm going to let you start us off.
Man, I appreciate that. Chris. Now this is something that's like I'm really passionate about. And for all the listeners out there, I played professional basketball in France for 13 years, and I've only been home 8 years. So when I got home 8 years ago, I've always enjoyed training and teaching kids basketball. Like, I mean, that's just really, I could do that for no money. Like, I just love being in the gym with kids and teaching them what I've learned and watching that growth process. But when I got back home, I just felt like we were moving in the wrong direction in epic proportions. I mean, we were highlighting highlights, and then you go watch a kid play and you can see that they can't jump stop, they can't pivot, they don't know where to be on the floor, but they have a lot of individual talent. And these are the things that the kids are looking at. So they're looking for instant gratification, where we all know that it doesn't, you know, it's a process to go through this. And so that's one of the reasons why when I came home, I wanted to work with the kids and wanted to be in the gym. I didn't necessarily want to recruit or make sure I got all the best kids in the area working with me. I didn't care. Like, if you've never touched a basketball before and you want to put the time in, come on in and work, because if you can stay consistent in the gym over a long period of time, you're going to improve. And that's the process I went through. And I tell people this all the time. I got cut in seventh grade. I was the number one shooting guard in the state of North Carolina in 1999, and I got cut in seventh grade. I don't know a story of being just better than everybody else. I just know I spent a lot of time in the gym.
Yeah, I mean, so it's wild, and I liken it to what I'm going through now. I'm coaching my son's fifth grade team, and you hear a lot of people who grew up playing AAU basketball, and AAU gets kind of broad brushed, right? Everything that we do now is not AAU. AAU is an organization within travel basketball, and a lot of the tournaments that people play in, the vast majority are not AAU sanctioned tournaments. They're just travel ball tournaments, right? And you hear, or I see comments on Facebook or social media, Instagram, Twitter about, you know, travel basketball is watered down because now there's so many teams, and that's not going to change. And so like that narrative is played out. So if you're one of those narrators of that, just stop it, right? Like, this is the game that we have, and so let's embrace it. And so five of my players, or seven of my players, I have 11 on my son's fifth grade team, seven have never played any travel basketball, right? And so one would think, well, why would you want them? But for me, like, that is a coach's dream, in my opinion. I get seven kids who love basketball, have some type of experience, rec basketball, church basketball, Y basketball, but now they want to take a step. That's my job as a coach. Whether they go on to play in college or not is how can I help them use this sport to increase their level of confidence, increase their resilience, increase their camaraderie and their unity with their fellow young basketball player to create relationships. And so that's one of the big passions I have is, hey, let's stop saying no to kids, right? Let's give them an experience. Let's give them a chance. Let's give them a platform. And I'm talking to you now, tournament directors, to where all of these players can have comparable competition. Let's do our due diligence instead of just putting 200 teams in a tournament and putting them in a bracket for them to get the piss kicked out of them. Let's do our due diligence and put them in a situation where they can grow in themselves and become their best selves, because what we're doing now is a disservice to development.
I agree with that. And sometimes it's like basketball people, right? When we talk about basketball, we assume that everybody know what we're talking about. And I'm constantly reminded about that every year when I'm talking to parents about their kids, that some parents just don't know some of the things that we're talking about. So I'm going to real quickly just explain the history of AAU.
Absolutely. Drop it.
Yes, because I'm a history person. And so like, parents, I'm 43 years old. When I was coming up in basketball, when we were coming up in basketball, you played rec or you played at the YMCA. And that it was really good leagues because that's what everybody played. Everybody played there. There was no other place to play. So you had really good competition. All right. You then would get selected to try out for the AAU team, which Chris just said is his own governing body. There was no Nike, there was no Puma, there was no Adidas, there was none of that. You play AAU, and you have your state tournament. You have to qualify, depending on the size of your state. That could be three teams, four teams, and then you all go down to Florida, and you play in the AAU Nationals, and that was the best of the best in the country from the best of the best in the state. You had to be selected to try out, and then you had to make the team. And so that's what AAU was. Now, when people say it's watered down, it is. You can pay to play. Instead of having two teams in each city, you have 60 teams in the city. So for me, what are you paying for? Because it's watered down, you have a lot of kids out here thinking they're better than they are. I don't want to sell parents an illusion. You're paying for the development. You're going to work on jump stops, pivots, left hand, being able to pass the ball with your left hand on the left side of the floor, knowing where to be on the floor, footwork, being all the things that translate to them being able to be functional players in high school. And then if they're putting in a crazy amount of time outside of that, maybe they can go play on the next level. But you're not paying for wins. You're not paying to make for an illusion that your kid is better than they are. You're paying for your kid to improve, especially elementary and middle school. I mean, kids are going to grow. Kids are going to stop growing. I just think that we're doing kids a disservice when we don't focus on things like communication, sacrifice, work ethic, being a good teammate, sportsmanship, mental toughness. Like, those are the things that we should be, that you should be paying for. And regardless of what, how good of a player they become, they'll have the tools equipped to be successful in life.
Yeah, the other thing that you're not paying for is you're not paying to play, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that is 100% a rec mindset. That's 100% yes. a YMCA, and nothing against the YMCA, nothing against current recreational leagues. I think those are fantastic, and we need those. And what we're saying is we need to help that transition when kids decide, hey, or parents and their children decide, hey, we're done playing for our church league. We're done playing for X Rec League. We're done playing for the YMCA. We want to get into this travel ball world. Right now, it's the wade pool, which is rec, to the deep end, which is travel ball, and there's no kind of zero entry. There's no 3-foot section. There's no 5-foot section. And that's the piece that we're talking about, is how can we help kids gradually walk their way and be ready to swim in the deep end. And for parents, you're paying for the development. And so if you're with a program that only cares about winning and only cares about, hey, I want the most athletic kids, and we're going to set up in a 2-3 or a 3-2 or a 1-2-2 press the entire game, your kids aren't learning. What the coach is he's maximizing their athletic ability to neutralize anything else on the court, but they're skipping fundamental things that players need to learn. Players need to learn man-to-man basketball. Listen, don't come at me with, hey, but you watch Syracuse, right? I had a coach come up to me the other day because I ran a tournament, and it was a no-zone tournament. He didn't play the last game. And then when I was asking him why, it slowly came out, well, you're handcuffing me as a coach because I can't play zone. He was coaching a U-17 team.
Wow.
I was like, coach, you shouldn't be playing zone. Ain't no college looking at players that only play zone. Well, you watch Syracuse, don't you? I do, coach. That's 3-star, 4-star, 5-star players at the highest level playing. I don't see those at this tournament. You need to be fundamentally helping your kids need to know how to play on ball. They need to know how to be in proper gap. They need to know how to load properly. They need to know how to help the helper, how to rotate when the ball gets to the middle and kicked out. All of those things need to happen before you start even throwing any type of junk defense in.
Yes, I agree with that. And so for those of you listening, I coach the girls at Manchester High School here in Midlothian, Virginia. We just won a state championship, first in school history. I'm excited about that. But the story is what Chris just talked about. A lot of those girls, and my first coaching experience when I got home was in rec. And I came into that situation with all this basketball knowledge, quote unquote, that I'm going to teach these fourth and fifth grade girls. And they just kicked my tail. Like, I didn't know. I went out there that first practice with a practice plan, and they didn't understand anything that I was talking about. And I got frustrated because I really didn't know how to communicate with them. And so I started going through the process of trying to figure out, okay, how do I teach the fundamentals to this age group? That graduated into parents asking me to coach a girls' AAU team, which I didn't want to do, but they talked me into it. And then I never forget the first tournament we played in. We went out there, we getting beat by 40 and 50 every game. We didn't even score double digits any of our first tournament games, only 9 points. And so after that, I remember having a meeting with the parents and just, you know, because I was in a space that I was uncomfortable in. I didn't really know how to get the kids out of that situation. And I just told them, I said, listen, I can't promise you that we're going to win any games, but I can promise you that if you stay patient and see this as a marathon, that they will get better.
Yeah,
and so, a lot of those girls who are on that team as fifth graders and sixth graders, when we start playing AAU, they just end up being state champions this year at 16 and 17 years old. And, man, we only had one team this year touch 60 points against us. And so people were talking about how much we were beating people by, but they really weren't paying attention to how good these girls were on defense. And I'm talking about helping each other, orienting the team to only shoot on certain parts of the floor, helping the helper, communicating. I mean, we were suffocating teams on defense, but it took years for me to teach them how to do that, right? And so a lot of times people see the finished product and they say, I want that. But they're reluctant to say, I want to go through the day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year process and the amount of time it takes to actually manufacture that result.
So just a couple of points of clarity, because I don't, you know, we talk about everyone paints AAU as the broad brush and it just gets used. similarly, I want to make sure, listen, I'm not saying zones aren't important, right?
Yeah.
I want to make sure that I establish that. I'm not anti-zone. Hell, I love a 1-3-1.
Yes, Lord.
I love it. I'm not playing a 1-3-1 the entire time. I'm not teaching a 1-3-1 until my team truly understands man-to-man. I mean, they are running it and executing it. So I'm not saying zones are bad and you shouldn't do it. I'm also saying not all tournament directors aren't doing their due diligence. There's some great tournaments out there who work tirelessly to research teams, see trends of teams that are in their tournaments to make sure that they're putting comparable divisions together, right? Also, there's operators, as far as organizational operators, who are honest with tournament directors that, hey, this is where this team sits. They need to be in this division. There's also program or organizations that have really good teams that say, just put us in X division because they want to get wins, right? So, like, we all need to be doing our due diligence. And then to your last point, Sheed, when you talked about people see the outcome, I think more parents and players and coaches put more stock in the weekend than they do in the weeknight.
Mm-hmm.
And the weekend is a test, right? That's all that is. But the weeknight, and even what you do outside of your weeknights with your teams, that is the school, right? And so I'm a huge advocate of tests don't tell me anything, right? Like, I don't like standardized tests. Games are a form, in my opinion, of standardized tests. They're important. But more importantly is, what are we doing to prepare our kids for those tests on and off the court? And so if your player or your child is struggling and you just want to move them because they're not playing enough, because they're not playing in the position that you think that they should play in, because you don't like how the coach utilizes them, because they're not winning enough, and it's like, cool, let me move them. All you're doing is kicking a can down the road that's going to implode and be a more powerful implosion at some point. You're not fixing, you're not helping your child become resilient and understand how to bloom where they're planted. Now, don't get me wrong. If something is wrong, if there's emotional damage, if it's not a safe environment for your child, absolutely. But if they're just struggling, but they're still being challenged to be their best self, you should not be moving your child. You should be helping to navigate those conversations, and that's your job as a parent, to help your child be in touch with their emotions and understand how to navigate those emotions, not to shield them from hardship. Because parents, look in the mirror. Ask yourself, how many trials and tribulations did you go through, and how much did you have to walk that alone? Why are you trying to circumvent your child from doing it now?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think, like, that line is blurred, right? I think we, because as a society, we're trying to be more mindful of everyone's feelings and emotions. And I'm not saying that's bad. I think there is a space for that.
Absolutely.
I think some of the things I were taught, the way that they were taught to me, they could have been taught in a different way, right? But at the same time, tears, for example, just using this as an example, tears doesn't necessarily mean something's bad is happening. Like, if your kid is serious about sport, if they're serious about being a doctor, if they're serious about being an engineer, if they're serious about starting their own business, man, frustration and adversity is going to come with this. We've taken kids and put them in all of these safe barriers, right? Like, kids don't go down to the park and play basketball anymore. They're always in some sanctioned space. And that does protect them from certain things, but it also can foster an illusion, because guess what? When we were growing up, if you walk down to that park to play basketball and you were not good enough to play, you standing on the sideline. Ain't nobody gonna pick you. if it's one of them parks where if you lose, you gotta wait 4 or 5 games before you play again. It might be time to go home. So you would go home dribbling your basketball, getting shots up. You knew you were gonna have to get better if you wanted to come down there and play at the park. Or you just didn't go down there, right? So this is the same space. I think a lot of parents, if their kids aren't, you know, getting a lot of playing time, that they'll look to try to put them in a place where they can play. But I always ask parents, and I'm asking the parents that listen to this too, when you start, when those things start happening, just weigh it. Is the coach or is the environment negative or destructive for your kid? If that's the case, please move your baby.
100%.
But if your kid is not getting playing time or not getting what he wants from the sport, ask yourself this. How many times have you seen your kid go run by themselves? How many times have you seen your kid doing push-ups and sit-ups in their room? How many times do you see them outside dribbling the basketball or shooting the basketball on their own, telling you, hey, take me to the gym, I want to work on my game? How much time are they investing in what they say they want outside of them actually doing it? I tend to believe that the kids who invest the most get the most. I tend to believe that.
Yeah, yeah. So, I just did a focus for the week, and the title was, and I think it's right in line with what we're talking about. The title was "Learning is a Gift, Even When Pain Is the Teacher."
Yes.
And so we as parents, and listen, you and I are both parents, and you've got your daughter Rain, who's finishing her final year from a travel basketball standpoint. I have my son who started in the second grade on a third grade team and didn't win a single game. Maybe won three games the whole course of that 11-month season, right? And now he's in the fifth grade, and he's better because of it. And so we're going through it as parents. And I think what you just said about, you know, understanding what's happening on the court and with your child, and you know if it's a negative, unsafe space, absolutely,
yes,
take care of your child. But the same is true from a playing time when it comes to, hey, I just want my kid to win. So cool, I'm going to go to a program where he's seventh, eighth, or she is seventh, eighth, ninth on the bench. But hey, they're winning. Hey, yeah. But you know, we're playing for this shoe, or we're playing for that, but they're winning. Cool. You know, your son should be on another program. Your daughter should be with another program where A, they're getting poured into, and B, they're on the court, right? Like, we're not saying playing time's not important. We're saying the type of playing time, the type of instruction, the type of development, the focus of that program is important. Just sitting on a bench so your son or daughter can get wins, it's not really doing anything. It's not conducive to any type of growth mindset. And then, you know, just to bring it back to the fundamentals, right? Like UConn basketball, right? Incredible. Love what Hurley's doing. And, you know, Cam Spencer, incredible, right? If it's good enough for the highest level, it's good enough for your child. There's no reason why Cam Spencer, being the size that he is, can get to the paint and finish over top of Zach Edey, right? Mm-hmm. But Cam Spencer knows how to play off too. Cam Spencer knows how to stride step to stop, right? And then knows how to be patient and pivot and work around the rim and work around defense. But that comes with years and years and years and years of focusing on the details, focusing on what is fundamentally needed for me to be successful. And when you have that type of discipline, it translates, right? Cam Spencer is at the highest level. Not every player is going to get to the highest level, but if I would venture to argue that if Cam Spencer stopped basketball now, he has got the discipline and the foundation needed to be successful in life because of the discipline he approached basketball with early on.
I agree with you on that. And I would add that your journey is your journey. Like don't compare this kid is doing that. This kid is, no, your journey is your journey. My journey, I got cut into seventh grade in my journey. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was the best thing that ever happened to me because I had a wake up call. In our season this past year as Manchester's coach, we had two losses. The first loss we had was the best thing that happened to us that season. You learn way more from losses and adversity than you do from wins. And to your point, Chris, you can look at it across the board, even in the NBA. 9 times out of 10, the teams that win are the most fundamentally sound. They have the best sports base. They're the best defenders. They're the best communicators. Like, everybody is doing what they're supposed to do on the court, right? Those players who are God-gifted, one-on-one, extremely talented players, I mean, it's entertaining to see. I'm a Michael Jordan guy myself, but five beats one more times than not. And so, like, just learning the fundamentals and being able to put yourself into a position to be a good player gives yourself the best opportunity to make teams. And that's what I want kids to understand, too. You have the exceptions to the rule. But for the most part, across the board, your kid is going to need to be strong, understand what to be on defense, need to be able to dribble, pass, shoot, listen, pay attention, clap, be a good teammate. And you create a space for yourself to make teams. And that's what we're trying to build, I know, through pro skills. But that's the same thing that we're trying to build in life. The more equipped you are, the more options you have.
So talk to the listeners. What was – so going back on your Manchester experience, what was that process like with the players? Like, where did they struggle through this long journey that they've been on, through this marathon that they've been on? Where did they struggle, and how were your interactions with those players through that journey, through that marathon, and then also the parents, right? Because a part of what you had to do and a part of what we do is – we have to educate parents. And again, parents listening, that's not a bad thing. That's not saying that you're dumb, you're stupid, you're ignorant, but you don't know what you don't know, right? And so a part of what we have to do as coaches and organizations is we have to educate you on what you can expect and how you can help your child through this process. So what was that experience like for you?
So I've been a coach 5 years. First thing, my first year, I had never coached teenage girls. So, like, before I start talking about anybody else, I had to do my homework. I had to get the right people around me. I have an all-female staff that played college basketball. Coach Shea, my first assistant, she coached in college. So I got a staff of people that could help me. But it was a belief. Right. So I looked up at the girls' banner, and there was two dates on there, 2006 and 1981, that the school was regional champs. Nothing else. And so I was like, nah, that's just kind of who I am as a person. Like, I'm not just going to be here. If I'm going to be here, let's make this better. Let's do something great. So once I said, hey, we're going to win a state championship here, it was then getting the buy-in. Right. Because you say, hey, let's win a state championship. Everybody like, yeah, let's do that. OK. All right. Meet you on the track tomorrow. You know, so like, then you have to get the buy-in, and then you have to figure out who really wants to buy in, who really wants to commit, who really wants to do this, and who is just saying that they want to do this. And then I was also blessed to be in a position where there were a lot of talented young ladies that were coming from the middle school, coming up to the high school in my third year, my daughter being one of them. And then my first year, we go 10 and 12. My second year, we go 3-10. My third year, we're 17-5, and we lose in the first round of the playoffs. And then my fourth year, we go 22-6. We make it to the state championship game, and we lose in overtime by 3. First time the school's ever been in the state championship game. Heartbreaking season. And then the thought process of, man, we got to do this all over again to try to get back. And so, like, year 5 was the hardest, really, because I told them I need four months of commitment. I need you to stop talking to your friends as much. I need you to focus in on school. I need you to eat right. I need you to sleep more. I need you to increase your water intake. Like, 4 months, we're going to do this. And everything became important. Little details became main things. So I would say that, like, getting the kids to understand how important the little things were was the most challenging. And once we got to a point when they start holding each other accountable about the little things, that's when I knew we had something.
So a couple of thoughts. One, you mentioned the date 1981. We're both 43. That's a good date because we're both born in 1981.
I'm an 80. I'm right at the
end. You're right at the end. December
27th.
Nice. Nice. I'm February.
1980.
Yeah. Still a good date. Still right. A good date. Two, you mentioned when you looked at those two dates, you're like, nah, I'm going to be here, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's translatable to players. Yeah. Are you going to be here? Are you going to be present? do you want to play basketball or do you want to be a basketball player? Because those are two different things, yes. Right? So when you step foot on the court, on the driveway, in the gym, wherever you are, be there. Don't just go through the motions. Be there. Be where your feet are. Be present and take that opportunity. And then the third thing that you said when you were like, hey, we're going to concentrate that 4 month, which was probably a preseason, right, leading into the actual season, who is actually going to commit, right? Who's actually going to be here? And we just had our first workout with the new high school, brand new high school, and the word that we're using for this season is willing, right? We don't care about the capabilities. Those things will work itself out, right? Like your talent, your skill level, that's going to be seen. The question is, are you willing to do what's needed? Are you willing to sacrifice weekends with your friends at times? Are you willing to sacrifice fast food? Are you willing to sacrifice soda and drink more water? Are you willing to sacrifice video games and social media and get a good night's sleep? What are you willing to do to make sure that your future is on a more straight path opportunity, right? Even though it's not going to be straight, because development, this marathon that we're talking about, is not linear at all. Yes. There's going to be ups and downs, left, right, zigzags, bumps, bruises. There's going to be times where you want to quit. There's going to be times where you question what you've done. There's going to be times where you have no idea which way is up, which way is forward. That is development. That is the journey of getting better. And so the question is, are you willing to be present in the good, the bad, the ugly, the mud, the bleeding, the tiredness, the exhaustion, the I have no idea feelings? Are you willing to be present in those and own those moments to push through to the other side? And then the second part of the willing is, parents, are you willing to be a spectator instead of the driver of your child's marathon? Are you willing to sit down and just let them open up to you? Let them crumble in front of you. Let them struggle in front of you, because we cannot prevent any hardship. If we try, we're just circumventing that development, circumventing that marathon.
I agree with you on that. And for the listeners, I'm a coach and a parent, right? So, like, I get both sides of this. Chris is the same way. It is not easy. Like,
no,
it is not easy to see your kid struggle. It is not easy to see your kid shed tears or deal with adversity or whatever. But we are all human, right? And so we're all connected. We're all very similar in most things. And most humans, if they have the choice, they are going to choose the path of least resistance. And that, like, I wish more parents, we all know this. I'm guilty of it. Everybody's guilty of it. We all have our own vice where it's, yep, this is more difficult than the other thing. But most of us are going to choose the path of least resistance. What is the easiest way that I have to, how do I get more doing less? In sport and in life, that just don't work, in my opinion. And so I think this is something for kids, the kids should learn when they're early, I mean, when they're young. But as they get older, more, they're going to have less opportunity to do that. You know what I mean? And that's one of the things, like in high school, once they get to the high school, and definitely if they get to college or professional, it's going to be about what you're actually doing. What are you willing to do? What are you, not how you feel, not about what other people are doing, not what's happening over there in the corner, not what are you willing to commit to? What are you willing to dedicate yourself to? Because if you do that, if you dedicate yourself to going to the weight room 4 to 5 times a week, your body's going to change. If you dedicate yourself to eating correctly, your body's going to change. Your mentality's going to change. Like, something is going to happen. But if you're like 50-50 or you're just talking a good game, you're not going to produce the results that are going to prove that you're not taking forth the actions. And so Coach Blaine Taylor, who I just saw the other day, he told me this when I was in college, and he was talking to me. And at first I was offended by it, but then I heard him and I've never forgotten it. And he said, in this world, there are only two kinds of people. There are people who figure out how to get the job done and people who make excuses why the job didn't get done. Who are you going to be? Mm-hmm. And when he told me that, I was like, At first, I'm kind of like, what you trying to say? But then I start thinking about it. I'm like, dog, that's right. You have to make a choice. You have to make a choice. And at the end of the day, you're going to be one or the other.
Yeah. So Keegan, funny, not a funny story. I mean, funny now looking back on it, funny because I had a parent moment. Because I should have a parent moment. I'm a parent. Like you said, we're all human. And I know all of this to be true, but sometimes I have my parent glasses on and sometimes I'm like, I don't want that. Keegan, we had a tournament a couple weeks ago. Keegan didn't play well at all. Like just uncharacteristically bad of himself. And you could see his face. Normally he has such joy and gratitude, which I love about it, when he's on the court with his teammates, where he smiles more than anything, to a point where as a parent, a coach, I'm like, yo, dog, stop smiling so much, right? Like, this ain't fun. We're battling right now. But then I step back. I'm like, he's enjoying the competition. He's enjoying the fellowship with his teammates, but didn't play well at all. And at the end of the tournament, like, he was beside himself. Like, I'm quitting. I hate basketball. I suck at this. I shouldn't be playing. I'm done. And I was like, hey, buddy, like I appreciate you saying that to me, and I'm going to let you sit in that. If that's how you feel, then that's how you feel, but I want to revisit it when you calm down. Not, okay, cool, let's quit, or okay, let's find another team. Like that, those were never my thoughts. It was, hey, sit in that. That's good. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being vulnerable. That's not easy for a fifth grader to say stuff like that. So we take the 45-minute drive from the facility. We get home, and I'm like, hey, man, don't forget, no video games. Sit in that emotion. Let's talk about this later. Well, an hour later, I'm like, well, where's Keegan at? And I hear, you know, the distant thud of a basketball, and he's out in the driveway shooting. He's out, you know, now he's getting in the, like, he's lowering the goal to 7.5, 8 foot, working on dunking as a fifth grader. He's working on, like, just his up and unders on a lower goal just so he could, you know, things like that. And I go out. I was like, hey, man, you ready to have a conversation? He's like, nah, Dad, I'm done. I'm getting better. And I was like, hey, I appreciate that, right? Like, so and I say all that because parents, sometimes we just have to let kids mull over and be in the mud. Be stuck in their emotions, and then we need to help them navigate those emotions. Sometimes you don't have to, they navigate it themselves, and then sometimes you do because they just don't understand the words to use to explain and describe how they're feeling and what they're emoting at the time. But parents, kids are resilient. That's what I've come to know, learn, and love about my children, but also about my opportunity in the world of coaching is they're going to be okay. They're going to be resilient. And so it leads me to these two thoughts. One is, as humans, we're always going to have an initial reaction, an initial thought, right? That first thought is always going to be the rawest, most human response to a feeling, right? Be in that. Accept it. It's okay. But then it's the second thought that matters, right? And this goes back to, well, what are you going to do about it, right? And so it can't be run away from it, right? So feel that first thought, acknowledge that first thought. I don't want my child to be in this. You're hurting my child's confidence. This isn't good for my child. This sucks, or this or that or the other. That's your first thought. That's your most rawest, most human thought.
Right.
Be in it, acknowledge it, accept it, and then move to your second thought, which is, how can I help my child through this, right? And it can't be runaway, right? Yeah. It can't be pull them. It can't be the easy, path of the least resistance, right? So first thought versus second thought. And then the next thought that I had while you were saying that, Sheed, is as a player, if you're not feeling well, run it out. If you're not shooting well, go get more game-like reps. If you're not doing something well, go do more of it, right? Like my pastor used to always say, make your misery your ministry, right? So whatever that you're struggling with, go out and do more of it. Just figure it out.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that because those feelings and emotions, parents, I promise you, every high level athlete that your kid watch on TV has had that. I'm pretty sure Michael Jordan, when he got cut in the 10th grade or 9th grade or whenever it was, he was devastated, right? And it made me think about my AAU coach, John Allen. He's a staple in my life. He'll be here this weekend. But I told a story about when I was 16 years old. I was a late boomer. So I told a story about when I was 16 years old and I was having the worst game that I felt like I ever had. And I went out. Coach pulled me out the game, told me I'm going to go in and win the game for the team. I didn't believe him. He put me back in the game. I ended up hitting the shot to win the game. And then my confidence went through the roof. And from then on, I haven't looked back. I was talking to Coach about that situation not too long ago. And come to find out, while he was talking to me, he said he came down there to talk to me, to pump positive energy into me and to help me believe in myself. One, because he did believe in me. Two, because he became a coach because when he was in college, he quit. And I think he was at Clark. So I can't remember exactly what he told me happened, but he quit the team. And he never forgave himself for quitting the team. So when he started coaching kids, one of his missions was he's never going to let a kid quit on themselves the way that he did. And it's just powerful for me to hear him say that because I was that kid. There was at like a point in my basketball life where I'm 16 years old and I don't have any, I'm not getting recruited. I don't have any basketball scholarships. I'm kind of floating in between the space of am I good or am I not, right? And just him believing in me and sticking with me and speaking life to me in a very vulnerable moment where I was questioning my own basketball future. Man, it turned my whole life around. Now I'm sitting here today as all these things I've done with basketball. So like, it's the thing that I really hope the parents grasp from what we're talking about is, man, struggle. Your kid is going to struggle through this. Like, that's what it's going to look like. They're going to struggle through this. And even I'm more leery of kids who are advanced when they're young. Like, kids who are better than everybody else, like when they're fourth, fifth, sixth grade, like they got all the handles, they got all the moves. I'm like, are they going to burn out by the time they're 16, 17 years old? What if they stop growing? Like, it's a process. Early success does not guarantee later success, and early failures does not guarantee later failures. You just have to go through the process day by day getting better.
So what this is a loaded question. What's the remedy? Like, how do we tackle this, right? Like, and I use it in the frame of reference because when you go into tournaments now, it's such a toxic at times, just energy charged not in the right way at times, whether it's getting on to the officials from the coaches, players going at it, coaches versus coaches, parents versus parents, parents to the court. At some point, we've got to step back as adults and keep the main thing the main thing. It's got to be about the kids. It's not about us as coaches. It's not about us as officials. It's not about the parents. I promise you, officials aren't trying to screw you over. They're not trying to screw your kids over, the coaches over. But yet, it's so hostile at times. Like, what's the remedy? And maybe that's a two-part because that's really talking about tournament environment. But when we talk about the development side of things and trying to keep the main thing the main thing, how do we change?
Well, I would say, just to answer your question head on, we're doing it. Like, Pro Skills, this is our mission. Like, that's what we're doing. Like, our mission is to change the culture. I can't tell you how many people have complimented our teams, not because we won games, but because of how our parents behaved, how our coaches behave, how our players behave. And I think positive energy breeds more positive energy. Negative energy breeds more negative energy. So it's not something that's going to stop overnight, but I do think that the more people that we have trying to do it the right way, that will just continue to breed more to say. On the other part, the other side of your point, I think that the directors, like in the city, for example, like when I run tournaments, God, I hope this stays the same way. We have yet to have a crazy thing happened at the tournament. However, I already know, but I don't know. However, I also know the guy that sends me referees. I know him. We have a relationship. That's like my uncle. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the people that come to the tournaments, as you meet them, I get to know who's who, right? And I think that the people at the top have to start having these conversations. One of the tournaments, I had to have a conversation with one of the refs because during the game, now I'm running a tournament, so at the tournament director during the game, he's going back and forth with somebody in the stands, one of the parents. See, I know you've seen this in AAU tournaments before. And I just had, after the game, I had to pull him to the side. I'm like, look, man, that is how crazy becomes crazy. Parents are going to say what they're going to say. We'll try to make sure they're not doing anything flagrant or disrespectful to you, but I need you to stay focused on the game. If you're going to start talking to the parents in the stands, you got to leave. You got to leave. Like, this has to stop being about the money. We have to be willing to lose money if things are not done correctly. Because in the long run, I think it'll be more beneficial for everybody. And this sends the message that we're not okay. I don't care how talented your team is if you're going to come in here acting crazy. I don't care how you think you are. If your parents, I don't care. Give me the kids that just learn how to play. We have a tournament of beginner teams. Like, this is about the kids. This is like, just for me, as a basketball player, I was telling the parent this the other day, I don't play basketball no more. I'm a coach and a director. That guy that used to play basketball, he's gone. But some of these people act like it's a direct competition with me. We're not competing. I don't play basketball no more. A few years back, we could throw the ball up and we could see. Yeah. But now, man, it's only about the kids. And I think that we have to keep that in the forefront. And they're nothing but reflections of us.
Yeah. I mean, the older I get, Sheed, the more I just try to approach my life, when you talk about good energy, just with being in a place of joy and gratitude, right? Like the Dalai Lama says, in order to find yourself, sometimes you must lose yourself in the service of others.
Yes.
And as a coach, instead of forcing ourselves to find ourselves in wins, right? Outcomes, how are we using our position as a coach, which in my opinion, the word coach is a better descriptor of someone than anything else. All respect to doctors and lawyers and, you know, everything else. But if you've got the word coach and you go by coach, you have a lot of responsibility. And so how are you helping your kids succeed? How are you helping your parents help your kids succeed? And so I have so much respect for coaches who are doing it the right way, right? Yes.
No, I think this the whole marathon, not a sprint, also applies to what we're talking about. I think as basketball continues to evolve, we're going to see more and more changes with how tournaments are run. Because like this is the first year that I had a call from with John Whitley at NTBA, and hey, the insurance companies are like, hold on. Like, it's too much craziness going on at these tournaments. We're gonna start taxing, or we're gonna stop allowing things. You see what I'm saying? So, like, it's the negativity is gonna create a space where it gets cut out. And in my opinion, I wish or I hope that in the future, some kind of way all of this youth basketball stuff falls up under the same umbrella where there is a set of bylaws and standards.
A governing body.
Where if you're going to call yourself a coach or you're going to call yourself a director, that there is some criteria that you have to meet. Because, man, this is like the Wild Wild West. Anybody can have an AAU team. Anybody can have a program. Anybody can run a tournament. And I'm not knocking anybody in particular, but if you're going to do it, let's do it. Like, let's be professional. Let's have some standard. Let's hold ourselves accountable. Let's try to be the best version of ourselves in all aspects. And then the kids are just going to follow suit because that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's also a really cool opportunity that if you want to do it the right way, if you're aligning with the right organization or the right assigner or the right tournament operator, it's a really incredible opportunity to continue pushing forward and change the game for good, right? Like change the culture of youth basketball. right? When going back to the ref thing, I ran a tournament 2 weekends ago. I had to talk to a ref during the game. Like he's running up and down the court, and I'm running up and down the court with him. I'm like, hey man, like you need to get off your phone. Like you're going to have a mutiny of these players, parents, and coaches because you're on your phone. He's like, hey man, my wife's pregnant. Congratulations, super excited for you. Don't be on the phone. Everybody's going through something, but your job right now is to be present in this moment. And then like there's a huge fight that broke out, and it was, I mean, and I've been around a lot of travel basketball. I've seen a lot of fights that have erupted. This is by far one of the worst that I've been a part of as the tournament director, and it just completely killed the vibe of the tournament. We had two 17U teams that were playing incredible basketball. It went to triple overtime, Sheed. I mean, it was like defensive stop after defensive stop after defensive stop, and then really good action to a bucket, really good action. I mean, it was just back and forth. Ended on a really big putback dunk. Great way to end it. Players and coaches are going through, dapping up. They're fine. It was heated, but it wasn't egregious heat, right? It was just in the moment of competition. Well, lo and behold, in the stands, two parents, moms of the losing team, went over and jumped a mom of the winning team. And I'm like, what? And then once you see that happens, like there, it's done, right? And I'm just like, what are we doing right now, right? Like parents, like wake up. What are we doing? We're putting ourselves in front of what's best for our kids.
Anytime I see a problem, I try to turn the mirror back to myself. I try to practice doing that, right? So when I coach, I sit down coaching. And I'm pretty sure people have their own perspective of why I do that.
Yeah.
I only do that for real. People are funny when you start hearing them talk. I'm like, I only do that for one reason. I was watching film of me coaching standing up. Maybe we need to start filming parents. I'm serious. Maybe we need to start filming parents.
Not a bad idea.
Sending them the film. I was watching film of me coaching. I'm 6'5". I coach girls. I'm very passionate about basketball. So I'm actually watching the game, and I'm looking at myself on the sideline, and I just look way too demonstrative to me. I'm like, in my mind's eye, that's not what I look like, right? But when I saw myself, I was like, I don't know if anybody else felt a certain way about it, but I felt a certain way about it. I said, I don't like how that looks. I don't like what that's communicating to me. So I started sitting down, and I got my assistant coaches to help me. Like, please tell me to sit down if I start doing too much. And so I sit down, and I just use my voice, which is good enough. But I think sometimes if parents saw themselves and they had to look at it, they would be like, yeah, I'm acting like I'm in third grade right there.
Or video them and send it to their employer. You know?
That might be a cool sign. there's a camera on all of the stands. We will send this to your employer if you act crazy in here today.
Yeah. So I salute you from sitting down. I can't. I got too much energy in me. Like I am up and down the sideline, but I completely respect it and understand it because I'm 6'8", so I know when I get animated, it looks large because it's 6'8", man, throwing my hands out. Now I'm close to 8 foot. And, you know, so I definitely appreciate the self-reflection there. So let's end on a couple of positive notes. And again, the whole conversation is positive, right? Like I don't want anyone listening to be like, they're just bad mouthing. Be a parent. Be engaged. Be your child's number one fan. Be a spectator. Be a cheerleader. Be it all. But do it in a positive manner. Like sit back, take stock in the other parents for a minute, right? Like just sit back and be a fly on the wall and ask yourself what they're doing and then what you're doing. How is it adding to the environment? Is it adding to a positive, nurturing, supportive culture? Or is it sucking the life out of and creating negative space for others, right? Because when you do it, someone else is going to do it, then someone else is going to do it versus, hey, should we approach being fans in a different manner, right? Like that's just the whole conversation about the parents, the whole conversation about player development, about it being a marathon, is just doing some self-reflection, taking stock in what is the priority, you know, what's the primary focus, what's the priority, what's the expectations, what are the outcomes that you want to get and not wins, right? Like that's not the outcomes that we're talking about. And please don't get it twisted, because I know I hear this narrative for PA, well, they don't care about winning. I'm not even going to address that, because that is very much an ignorant statement. Right. There's no one in this organization that does not want to win, that doesn't want to play with competitive fire and have a chance to win. That's not it, all right? So we're not even going to broach that. So just a disclaimer for the whole conversation, right? And then the second disclaimer is we're all in it together, right? Like no one's standing on a pedestal. No one's standing looking down. That's not what this is about. It's more about, hey, how can we continue to build and foster a positive community of parents, players, coaches, tournament organizers, referees? How can we build that community to impact the culture of basketball? And it doesn't happen unless we have these conversations and we point out things that we see that aren't helping us advance that mission forward, right? So just a disclaimer to the whole conversation, which we could continue to go on and on and on about and chop up and chop up. Want to end on two high notes. One, just a hot take, right? Because, you know, I like hot takes. I like to be the contrarian. I am argumentative at times. I know that. I acknowledge that. You mentioned, so for our listeners, you mentioned that Michael Jordan's the GOAT. Why?
To me, he's the only player I've ever seen that has no weaknesses. And where he's able to go mentally, like the focus level, like where he's able to go mentally, I have not seen that on another player.
Yeah. So this is my hot take, right? I don't even, like, one, there shouldn't just be a greatest of all time debate, right? And I think I've evolved into that, because up until, like, 2 years ago, it's always been Michael Jordan's the GOAT, Michael Jordan's the GOAT. Not going to argue it. Now it's, I've got two tiers. Michael Jordan and Kobe are on Mount Olympus for me, and no one's touching them right now. Mm-hmm. Then we can have a Mount Rushmore of, mm-hmm. Hey, here are the other top four, right? Like, it's just silly to argue who's the greatest of all time when there's so many variables to put in there, in my opinion. But when you talk about, like, just the mentality, the dog-eat-dog, I'm going to do everything I can, I'm going to be mentally strong, I'm going to have a growth mindset, no one can touch Kobe and Michael Jordan right now. For me, well, they're on Mount Olympus.
Well, to me, the reason why I say Michael Jordan is because I feel like even right now, everybody's a GOAT. Like we transition into like we use the word GOAT, like it's just another thing to say. And when Michael Jordan didn't deem himself the GOAT.
Not at all.
His peers, the people who watched them, the people who witnessed this, it was not a question of who was the best. It was not a debate, right? And I think it's unfair to kind of say who's better than who because of eras. You play in different eras with 100%. Different rules. It's so many different contexts. But to me, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has to be in the conversation. Just like by every metric,
he's on my Mount Rushmore.
Yes, yes. So like, it's opinionated. And I'm cool with all of the debates as long as it doesn't turn in. I'm gonna make my point about my player by tearing another player down.
Yeah.
If you got to do that, you just already proved my point.
Yeah. Kareem, Magic, Steph, and LeBron are on my Mount Rushmore. Kobe and Michael, they're on Mount Olympus. And Steph is only on there because of the way he came in, and like, you can't say he did not change the game of basketball with what he has done behind the three-point line.
No, I agree with that. I wouldn't put him on my top four, but I understand why.
Yeah,
I understand why. Because he's one of my favorite players. So I'm a shooter. He's one of my favorite players to watch for sure. But the GOAT conversation, this is how I kind of answer that question. It's only one player that is on all the GOAT kind of debates. Like, regardless of the debate, like who you think, it's only one player who is in every conversation. To me, that answers it.
Yeah. Yeah.
M. Jensen.
That's it. That's it. Just a point of clarity. Not a correction, just a point of clarity. He didn't get cut in the ninth grade. He just didn't make varsity. He did play JV basketball.
That's true.
I know everyone's like, oh, he got cut. And I mean, yes, from varsity, but he still hooped. He still played JV. But he didn't quit. He didn't transfer schools. Right. He got better. And, you know, the rest is history. So we're going to end on this. It's how we always end the podcast. I'm going to give you the mic and the mountaintop, although this whole conversation has been a mic and a mountaintop. Anything that was not said that is on your heart, on your mind, just to the listeners, to the parents, to the players, specifically about development and the marathon race that we are in?
First of all, parents, to piggyback off what Chris said a little earlier, man, we love this game of basketball. This was not this conversation was not to be deemed negative in any way. We're just so passionate about it that we want to see everybody lift up. We want to see everybody operating at their highest level. And from a kid, from a person, from a man who has dealt with a lot of adversity, a lot of heartache in trying to become the best basketball player he has been, from getting cut to being on the bench to realizing a lot of my goals, I want to see these young kids. Okay, so real quick, when I played professionally, I was somebody hit big shots in the fourth quarter, game-winning shots. That's when I came alive. I get that same feeling now when I see kids achieve.
Yeah.
And it was weird the first time it happened because I didn't know I was gonna get that feeling. You see, you're working with a kid, and they're not good dribbling with their left hand, and next thing you know, they make a move in the game, make a left hand lift, they turn around and look at you like, I did it. Man, that feeling right there is awesome. But I also know that's on the other side of difficulty. That's on the other side of frustration. That's on the other side of self-doubt. That's on the other side of low self-esteem. That's on the other side of questioning yourself. And so myself and this organization wants to be in this space where we say we believe in you. And even if you're going out there getting your butt kicked, we know that if you keep working, you're gonna be able to experience something so awesome on the other side that I can't really explain it to you. Just keep going. Love it.
I want to cap that off with, because I think it's so fitting, the story. Keegan's team, I had that moment too, right? Where you know, we run something to perfection, hit a game winner, and I think I'm the biggest kid out there.
Right.
Just with immense kind of just happiness and joy, and like, man, this is so much fun.
Yes.
We were in a tight battle with another fifth grade team, went to overtime. Coach and I are like trying to like calling timeout, scheming and trying to just figure things out. Right. Cause you know, we're trying to win the game. Cause yes, we do want to win. And it came down to, we got the ball. It's like 4 or 5 seconds left. Call a timeout, pull up a brand new out of bounds play. Hey guys, like, this is what we're running. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I know we haven't done this before. Let's just have a little fun. Let's do something different. Let's just see what we're made of, right? Works to perfection. One of my players hits a touch kind of layup over a defender, goes in, game over. What's beautiful about that, other than it worked and we won, the guy who made it started 2.5 years ago with PSB as a Player Development Academy player. Could not dribble, could not shoot, could not do anything, right? And his parents were honest about our feedback and where we were at, and he worked with me and another coach for 2.5 years, and now he's one of our better players. It's incredible the maturation that he's made, but it's because he wanted to get better. He's having fun. There's a safe space for him to not be good and develop in. And then his parents trusted the process, right? And that process is still going, right? He's just in the fifth grade. He's still behind the eight ball because he's still learning. And so just to get towards the whole trust the process, there's going to be failures, there's going to be successes. It was just a really neat moment for me, who had been with that player since he started with us in a Player Development Academy. And all we did for maybe a month straight was footwork and dribbling. Footwork, pivots, and dribbling. And then we worked on layups. And then we put footwork, pivot, and dribbling into layups. Like he's like, Coach, when are we shooting? Not even close. Yes. Not even close. We're staying around the rim. Footwork, dribbling, layups. Footwork, dribbling, layups. And now he's got such a tough mindset. It's just been incredible. And again, we could go on and on and on about these stories, about development, and we're going to continue these types of conversations, have some about coaches and how coaches can maturate and be better. She, man, I've got nothing but the utmost love and respect for you and what you do and for our friendship and for the space that you play with your voice in this game of basketball, and just am incredibly appreciative of you and our friendship and what you're doing in Richmond and what you're doing nationally, and just want to do more of these, because I think your voice, your experience, your presence, your tone, your outlook, everything is what is needed more in the game of basketball for our youth. So, man, thank you so much, man.
I appreciate it, man. We're going to keep getting better every day.
Absolutely. That's all we can do, that or give up, and, well, we ain't giving up. To the listeners, again, I hope you really appreciate the conversation that we had. And again, give us a like, give us a follow, give us any comments, anything you want us to chop up. It doesn't have to be recruiting. We can just do a podcast of all hot takes. So put them in the comments and let us know any type of conversation you want us to have. But we appreciate you all as well. And as always, leave it all on the court.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and subscribe so that you can stay tuned to future episodes. Follow us on all of our social media platforms at ProSkills Basketball on Instagram and Facebook, and at ProSkills B-Ball on Twitter. And if you'd like to find out more information about our teams, camps, clinics, or virtual basketball, check out our website at www.proskillsbasketball.com. We'll see you soon on another conversation.